building rights there. Do you accept building rights in Edgewood? I turned to Aaron, expecting that he might have some insider information to share, but he just shrugged at me and made a clueless face as he stuffed more food in his mouth. I can change homes if I'd like, right? If you don't like Edgewood, you can always build a new home somewhere in the Freelands. I shrugged. Okay, then, I'll go with Edgewood. Very well, the Queen clucked. When you're ready, I'll have a few elves skilled in carpentry accompany you to Edgewood to work on your new home. Any expansions or upgrades you make to your home will be at your own expense. I nodded. You are now permitted to build structures in Edgewood. Hey, I helped with that little quest today, Aaron said. If it weren't for me, these guys might be dead. You almost got us killed, I muttered. Yeah, and then I saved your ass right when you were about to get roasted. Is that true? The Queen asked. It's true, Adili recounted. He helped to the best of his ability. The Queen gritted her teeth and panned up and down Aaron's fur ensemble. Very well. I'll commission a hut for you in Edgewood as well. That'll be nice, if we survive, Aaron said sarcastically. Whatever do you mean? The Queen asked. I placed my hand on Aaron's arm, knowing that he would just spark a confusing conversation. We've got business in Linden tomorrow. It's complicated. The Queen seemed to dismiss Aaron's comment. Well then, it would be against my morals to ask you on a mission that would assist the orcs in any way, but I do hope you'll keep your eyes open while you're in Edgewood, and do whatever is necessary to help maintain peace. I'll do what I can, I said with a nod. We finished our mostly vegetarian meal, and the Queen granted Aaron permission to stay in a room near mine for the night. Adili walked us out of the palace and to the lower levels of the Vale. Thanks for everything today, Aaron mumbled as we stood in front of the door to his room. I mean, saving me from the orcs and all. Yeah, no problem, I replied. I guess I should thank you for saving me from the shaman, too. Aaron shrugged. But mostly, thanks for agreeing to help me. It's bigger than us. If it's true, then I guess I don't have much of a choice. Aaron held out a hand and I shook it while we both exchanged smiles. I couldn't explain why, but I felt a little bit awkward. Not because Aaron was dressed like an Eskimo, but because he was human. A real human, and I felt the same social weirdness towards him that I had with other people on Earth. Good night, guys, Aaron said before retreating into his room. Adili and I said good night back to him and started towards my room. The things that you and Aaron talk about are so difficult for me to understand. Earth, game world, blockchain. These are terms I've never heard before. I mumbled. I grabbed my bag and opened it up for Adili to see. The bag you gave me. It opens to another world, right? The other world? Yes, of course. Earth is another world, the same as other world. We reborns come from that world, but unlike the beasts or the items that we send back and forth there, we can't return to Earth. Can elves go there? I immediately started laughing. And the more I thought about it, the more uncontrollable my laughter became. I could just imagine high elves spawning in the middle of a big city, pulling up to a drive-thru on the back of a tiger, trying to order elven pie. Or how humans would rush to get plastic surgery once they found out that pointy ears were the new in look. What's so funny? Nothing, I huffed, trying to calm my laughter. Elves can't go to Earth. What about Game World? Adili asked. Game World is here, in Eden's Gate, I explained. But that's not a really accurate term. The more I stay here, the more I realize that this is a real world. The people on Earth, however, don't think that it's real, and that's what Aaron wants me to help him prove. Adili took a deep breath and shook her head. That's all so very complicated, I chuckled. Trust me, I know. Well, Gunnar Long, from Earth, Adili said, I'm very glad that you're here with us now. Her large green eyes sparkled, and her smile was perhaps the most sincere that it had been since I first saw her. I'm glad to be here, I replied, frozen by her beauty. I think. Adili blinked a couple times and then turned to walk away. I'll find you and Erin tomorrow morning to escort you to Linden. Good night, I said as she walked away. Good night, Reborn. I stepped inside my room and closed the door. I was feeling exhausted after everything, but I had been missing someone a lot. Oddly enough, it wasn't Rachel or Adili. Sora, I whispered, and pressed my hand against the floor, attempting to summon her for the first time. I thought I saw a pulse ripple from my hands, but it wasn't nearly as intense as when Jax or Adili had summoned their beasts, and for a moment there was nothing but silence. I thought maybe I failed to summon, or maybe it just didn't work indoors. But then there was a tiny meow, a little louder and a little hoarser than what I remembered. Another meow, and Sora poked her head out from under my bed. The moment she saw me, she jumped onto my leg and started climbing up my body, resting on my shoulder and licking at my ear. What was surprising was that she was significantly bigger than before I released her to the other world, at least 3 or 4 pounds. She was clearly still a cub, but there was a noticeable growth in her strength. Name, Sora. Race, Great Panther. Level, 3. Health, 30. Mana, 15. Stamina, 30. Status, friendly. Sora licked viciously, meowed, and pawed at my head, now being more careful not to scratch me with her claws. Thank goodness. Her nails had grown significantly longer and more sharp. I missed you too, I said, rubbing her thick fur. I kneeled down and motioned towards the bed. She seemed to understand what I was asking when she jumped off, and I began to take off my armor. I lay in bed, playing with Sora for a couple hours as I pondered how much my life had changed. It was strange that I felt so comfortable around the NPCs in Eden's Gate, but when I met up with Erin, I just felt the same awkwardness that I had with people back on Earth, despite him being a pretty decent guy. Expectations, I guessed. I had always played games when I was back on Earth to escape from the real world, to be whoever I wanted to be. And Erin's sizzle was a reminder of the real world. But I knew he wasn't going to be the last reborn that I'd encounter in Eden's Gate, and there was nowhere else for me to hide. This was my real world now, unless I somehow learned otherwise. His claim that there would be a mass blackout on Earth to shut down my new world seemed far-fetched, but then again, I never thought I'd be dead and stuck inside a world where I was slaying orcs and dining with high elves. Nothing seemed beyond the realm of reality anymore. Chapter 22. Month 1, Day 6, Year 1. I opened a food ration and tossed it to Sora as I equipped all my armor and weapons. She devoured the whole thing in less than a minute and climbed up to my shoulder as I headed out the door. I stopped by Rise's shop to replace my leather tunic, which was down to its last one durability, for a new chest piece.
Lightweight elven leather vest, plus 21 armor, durability 10 out of 10, quality average, rarity common, weight 1.3 kilograms.
I also picked up a couple bandages and some filler arrows to fill my quiver for the ones I had lost. All in all, I walked away 125 gold poorer, which left me with 450 gold pieces. I got a quote from him on my siphon spirit scroll, and he was willing to offer a whopping 800 gold for it, but I decided to hang on to it for a bit longer, just in case. I pulled up my stats and realized that I had forgotten to assign my attribute points and level points from my last level up, and quickly dumped 2 attribute points into dexterity and 1 point into intelligence. Since I had just leveled up my fire magic, and I was already close to a natural level up in swords, I placed my LP into fire magic. I made a conscious decision that it was my last LP investment into fire magic, unless I found some higher level spells. To my delight,
I was already at 40% progress into level 7 from all the XP that I had gained from completing Queen Farani's quest.
Gunner Long. Race, human. Level, 7. Progress, 40%. Title, none. Health, 145 plus. Mana, 120. Stamina, 110. Strength, 17 plus. Dexterity, 19. Intelligence, 18. Vitality, 12 plus. Wisdom, 13. Willpower, 11. Charisma, 10. AR rating, 41. Resists, 10% fire resistance, 15% water resistance. Traits, Elven Touch. Primary skills, First Aid level 2, progress 0%. Sneak level 3, progress 0%. Inspect level 3, progress 0%. Tinkering level 1, progress 0%. Summon Beast, mastered. Inscription level 1, progress 0%. Combat skills, Dodge level 2, progress 90%. Small Blades level 2, progress 0%. Backstab level 1, progress 0%. Archery level 3, progress 70%. Block level 1, progress 80%. Swords level 3, progress 80%. Snipeshot level 1, progress 69%. Dirty Fighting level 1, progress 0%. Magic skills, Fire Magic level 5, progress 0%.
As I was leaving Rise's shop, Aaron came running out of his room, pulling his fur chest piece over his head.
Hey, are we ready to go? He asked.
We have to wait for Adili. I'm sure she'll be around within a couple hours.
A couple hours? Hell, we've got to leave.
Relax, I said. Without Adili, it would take us forever to get there. Sora arched her back and gave her best panther growl in Aaron's direction.
Vicious pet you've got there,
I chuckled. She's got spirit.
And an unusual one, too. I recall us programming humans to have a higher bonding ability towards domesticated animals, like horses, camels, and dogs. Most reborns of your level wouldn't even be able to get close to a beast like that.
I was in the right place at the right time. I looked up toward Rise's shop.
You might want to buy a starter bow and some supplies before we head out.
I'll show you to the runestone so you can bind to it when you're ready. When Aaron entered Rise's shop, I heard him yell out,
"Put the bow down! I'm not an orc! It's just fur!" Which made me laugh.
He spent a few minutes in the shop, and when he exited, he had a small short bow and a basic quiver of arrows strapped to his back. I walked him up the hill towards the runestone, and right when we reached the top, there was a deafening howl that pierced through the air. I looked up to see where the sound was coming from, and just about wet my pants when a 50-foot yellow dragon swooped overhead, so close to us that the wind from its wings practically knocked us down. I instinctively kneeled and pulled out my sword, and Sora climbed around to my back and held on for dear life. It was a futile move to pull out my blade, as there was almost no chance I'd be able to do anything if the monstrosity had actually attacked, but I held it tightly, just in case. My eyes locked on the massive beast as it soared through the sky, and was only interrupted when another dragon appeared, this one red, flying towards the other, its wings causing loud rippling waves to resonate all around us.
"Holy shit," Aaron said. "I never saw any dragons during testing."
The two dragons wailed at each other and began circling a slender, steep mountain in the distance with a narrow, rounded peak. It wasn't clear where they went from where we were standing, but eventually they disappeared behind the tip of the rocks.
"Dragon's Crest," Adili said from behind us.
Aaron and I turned to see Adili walking up the path we had followed.
"The dragons are rather passive for now. They steal cattle from time to time and only kill people who try to enter their homes."
"That's good to know," I said.
"But the tables in High Castle say that the day when the reborns arrive, so too will a day when dragons breathe fire once again."
"That's odd," Aaron said. "Dragons breathe fire again. The tablets that we designed talked about reborns shaping the landscape, but I don't remember them talking about dragons. Dr. Winston obviously took several liberties that we weren't told about."
"Yeah, like locking us inside the game," I said sarcastically. I pulled up my settings menu and tried the logout button, just for shits and giggles. I was pretty sure it wasn't going to work, but hey, you never know. Nothing happened, not even a click.
"Shall we pray before we leave?"
Adili asked. I nodded and sheathed my sword as Adili dropped before the runestone. She pressed her arms together and started mumbling something, while Aaron walked up to the stone, touched it, and bound himself there. Adili finished praying, stood up, and stretched her arms out.
Are you two ready?
We nodded, and she immediately cast Spirit of the Forest on us all. We sprinted off for Linden. I didn't put Sora away as we traveled through the forest, and she seemed to enjoy the ride, digging her paws into my leather armor, eyes wide as the trees and greenery around us passed by in a blur. I figured it was a similar kind of training that her mother would have given her, preparing her for the day that she too traveled the forest at such speeds. An hour later, we cleared the forest and reached Linden. It was right before noon, and there were many more people outside going about their daily duties than the first time that I arrived.
Is there anything else I can help you with, Gunnar? Adili asked. If not, I will return to the Vale.
I think we're okay from here. Adili reached out and touched my neck. It was the first time that I could remember her skin touching mine, and the feel of her soft, bare hand against me sent shockwaves through my body. She was warm, and had a skin texture just like a human. She may have seemed real before, but the fact that she felt real put her on a totally different plane of realism.
Good luck in your journey, and I hope to see you again, Gunnar Long, she said.
She pulled her hand off me and turned to Aaron.
Good luck, Orc Man.
Aaron held his hands up and out to his side. His jaw went slack and his brow creased.
I'm not an orc. What the hell?
Adili winked.
What? Never heard an elf tell a joke before?
Adili raised a hand, closed her eyes, and brown streams of energy fled from her fingertips and poured into Aaron and me. A square, textured icon appeared below my health bar.
Barkskin. Your skin is harder to penetrate than the bark of a redwood tree. +20 armor. Spell duration, 2 hours. Source, Adili.
Take care, my nizzles, Adili cooed before dashing back into Adenfall Forest.
Damn, Aaron said. That's my kind of woman.
He rubbed his fingers against his skin.
Knows how to take care of a man.
I touched my skin as well, and while it didn't feel any different, I had a deep-down sense that I was more durable than before, and the stats on my status screen showed the +20 armor in effect.
By the way, Gunnar, Aaron added, put a couple points in charisma, for God's sake.
What for?
It's pretty clear that Adili has a thing for you. A few charisma points and you could be hitting that.
Hitting that? I don't know how good I'd feel about sleeping with someone just because I put points in one of my stats.
That's not how it works. You could have a charisma rating of 100, but if you're a douchebag, nobody is going to be interested in you. But you've already got this girl interested in your natural charm. You're blind if you can't tell, and a little boost in charisma would be just enough to put you in the fly zone, if you get my drift.
She's an NPC, and I've got a girlfriend. Aaron laughed.
And what will you do if you can't find your girlfriend? Or she isn't in the game anymore. You'll just stay alone forever, ignore all the other fine options around you?
Don't start being annoying again, I scoffed.
I'm not being annoying, I'm being real.
I shook my head. Rachel's got to be out there.
But what if she's not?
I sighed and shook my head again. Then I guess I'd move on. Or at least I'd try. Aaron cleared his throat.
Charisma, dude. Put some points in charisma. I beta tested some ladies before launch. Oh my God, you can't tell the difference.
I grinned and rolled my eyes. I just couldn't take the guy seriously. I patted Sora on the head and then dismissed her before we headed for Enos's shop. When we pushed through the door, the old man I remembered opened his arms wide and bellowed.
Welcome to Enos's Shop of Magic. Have a look around.
His eyes met mine.
Oh, welcome, repeat customer.
Not the usual Enos. There was another patron inside, looking at the magic rings that he had displayed under a glass case. He looked up when we entered, but immediately turned back towards the rings.
Just play it cool until the other guy leaves, I whispered in Aaron's ear.
He made a play of looking at scrolls and other items, and I noticed right away that many of the things I saw before had been marked up in price by 50% or more. When the other customer left, I asked Enos, why are your prices so much higher than before? Enos gave his brightest smile.
Business has been booming. You've got to adjust your prices to keep up with demand, right? My customers have more than tripled.
Well, I guess that's good.
What brings you back, was it Gunther?
Enos asked.
Gunner. Right. Nice to see you again, Gunner. What can I help you with?
I was surprised by the shopkeep's sudden friendliness and customer service attitude, but I couldn't tell if it was being faked or not. I have a favor to ask you.
A favor? Enos questioned.
You told me you're skilled in arcane magic, right? Enos nodded. We need a way to get teleported somewhere. Grimora.
Oh, Enos said, raising his eyebrows. I can't help you with that.
Enos turned to his inventory.
But if you'd like to buy anything, be my guest.
Why can't you help us? You're not skilled enough?
I never said that,
Enos replied, dropping his smile.
But you can't just come walking into my shop, asking me to teleport you to such and such places. Do I look like a travel agent?
I don't know how to explain this to you, I said. But we have a time-sensitive situation on our hands. We need to get to Grimora to prevent Eden's gate from shutting down. We really need your help.
Enos waved a dismissive hand. Take a boat across the Serpent Sea like everyone else.
We don't have time for that, Aaron interjected.
And who is this idiot dressed like an orc?
He's an idiot who's trying to save your life. Enos rolled his eyes and laughed.
I have no idea how to deal with nutcases like you. You two are the last people I need to save my life.
Right now, you're our only hope, Enos.
What part of no don't you understand? Enos replied. I don't spend my mana on people for free. I'm a businessman, not a charity.
I can do you another favor, I suggested. Enos's eyes went wide, and he lifted his chin high and to the side.
I don't recall you ever doing me any favors.
He glared at me with eyes that told me to keep my mouth shut. We could do you a favor, I corrected.
I don't require any assistance at this time, but thank you for your generous offer.
I swallowed hard. Maybe I'm asking the wrong question. Is there anything we can offer to get you to transport us to Grimora? Enos crossed his eyes and sighed as he bobbed his head from side to side. After a few seconds of thought, he said,
800 gold would cover the cost, I suppose.
800 gold for something that costs you nothing? That's outrageous, I blurted.
Channeling a portal is a very taxing endeavor. I'm certain that I'll want to take a nap afterwards. It's also a spell that requires reagents to cast, which I don't have at the moment. So, 800 gold plus the required reagents.
400 gold, I countered. After all, I only had 450 in my purse.
Oh, please, Enos moaned. I'll make that amount by selling a single low-level scroll.
I reached in my bag and reluctantly pulled out my siphon spirit scroll. I wasn't looking forward to parting with it, but it was one of my last options. I'll give you this scroll in exchange for a portal. Enos grabbed the scroll and laid it on his counter. He lifted a finger, and a yellow sparkle swam out of the tip, then fell into the scroll.
Oh, he said, raising his eyebrows. Now this is interesting.
Deal? I asked.
400 gold plus the scroll, and we have a deal.
400 gold plus the scroll? I've already been offered 800 for the scroll.
I don't see anyone else in the room offering to buy your scroll or cast portals for you.
You're a real dick, man, Aaron spat. Enos scowled. I flicked my fingertips at Enos and sighed.
Fine, take the scroll, and I'll give you 400 gold.
I already knew how stubborn the guy was, but that didn't erase the regret of not selling the scroll to Rise.
I'll still need the required reagent, Enos said.
What reagent is that?
Just one mandrake root is all the spell requires.
Where do I get that? I asked.
Enos snapped his lips and placed his hands on his hips.
In the Freelands, near the village of Thorpes, there's a grassy knoll where mandrake grows sporadically, but you'll need to be careful there because we don't have time to go back to the Freelands, Aaron shouted.
I shook my head. It would take us more than a day to travel there and back on our own. We've got to leave today.
The mage sighed and rolled his eyes.
Well, I suppose Gerard might have some. You could try over there, if you must, he said as if it were the worst possible suggestion he could ever make in his life.
We left the arcane shop and headed for Gerard's general goods store, and when I pushed the door open, I wasn't greeted by the same bubbly man that I had been greeted by before. Instead, Gerard was sleeping with his head on the counter, drool dripping out of his unshaven lips. Gerard? I called. The shopkeeper mumbled.
Gerard,
I said again, a little louder. Gerard moaned and lifted his head off the counter, blinking his eyes several times.
Oh, a customer, welcome, he said groggily. How can I help you?
We'd like to buy a reagent, I replied. Gerard wiped the back of his hand across his eyes and blinked again.
Oh, I remember you. You want to buy magic reagents?
Yeah. I looked around and noticed that his shop looked quite a bit more organized than it had before.
Right over there, he said, pointing to a glass case with several flowers and roots underneath.
I immediately noticed that strange brown root with long, stringy extremities labeled as mandrake. This one, I said, pointing. The mandrake root. Gerard yawned.
I can give you a bundle of it for 100 gold. I usually sell bundles for 200, but business has been extremely slow lately.
I only need one, I replied.
Only one? Gerard asked. I assure you that this is authentic mandrake, and 100 gold is quite the steal.
I believe you, I said.
So then a bundle? He asked again.
Only one. Gerard sighed.
Look, you're the first customer I've had in 2 days. At this rate, I won't be able to pay my building dues. I'll be forced to close my shop within a week or two.
It's that bad? I asked. Gerard rattled his head and his eyes were glistening with sadness.
I don't know who, but someone must have traded me fake magic items. I had 3 customers complain that using their scrolls made their homes stink of foul. No one in Linden wants to buy from me anymore.
I felt terrible knowing that I was responsible for Gerard's business going bad, but there was little I could do to fix things. What would be the cost of 1 mandrake root? Gerard sighed again.
I'll sell you 1 for 10 gold. At least I'll be able to eat tonight.
I reached into my purse and pulled out 50 gold pieces. Here, take 50 gold for 1. Consider it overpayment for the kindness you've shown me.
Really?
Gerard said, his eyes going wide when I placed the gold in his hand.
Thank you.
He rounded the store counter and threw a pair of strong arms around me.
You're a kind man, indeed. We need more people like you here in Linden. Oh, God. If only he knew what I did to him.
I made a mental note to come back and check in on the guy if I ever had another opportunity. I left Gerard's shop with just enough gold to pay Enos. When we walked back into the magic shop, I handed him the mandrake, the gold, and gave him the evil eye as he counted it all out.
You're a greedy bastard, Enos, I said.
Oh, hush, he replied, still counting the coins. Don't go and spoil our deal now.
He pocketed the coins and walked to the back of his shop, pulling out a thick, hardcover book.
You're lucky that my rune book has an inscription for Grimora, but I can't guarantee it'll be anywhere near wherever you're trying to go. Go on and cast the damn spell already, Aaron barked. Well, I'm not going to cast it here, he replied,
Imagine what my customers would think if they walked in here and there was a portal inside. It wouldn't be at all professional, I'll tell you that.
We followed Enos outside, where he finished locking up his shop and led us to a small wooded area, a few hundred meters outside the edges of Linden.
I suppose this is far enough that no children will see it and curiously wander inside.
Enos sneered. He placed the mandrake root on the ground and took a step back, waving his hand at us.
Stand several paces away now.
Aaron and I took a few steps back from where Enos rested the root, and the mage opened his rune book, flipping through the pages. I could see from where I was standing that there were several designs on each page, similar to the ones on runestones. I leaned over to Aaron's ear.
Rune books have to do with inscription? I asked.
Aaron nodded.
But only high-level scribes can mark rune books.
Enos settled on a particular page in the rune book and held out his hand towards the location where he placed the mandrake root. He closed his eyes, and the inscription inside the book started glowing a bright white light, and a small blue swirl of energy appeared a few feet above the mandrake root. As he continued channeling the spell, the blue energy continued to grow in size, and the root sizzled and turned to ash. It was about 20 seconds after he began casting that the blue swirl of energy had grown into a portal the size of a small door. It was slightly opaque and looked like the tiny particles were dancing around on its surface. Enos snapped the book shut and swung his hand to his back, stumbling a bit but catching himself against a tree before he fell.
"There's your damn portal," he huffed as if he were out of breath. "You've got 24 hours before the portal dissipates, so don't get lost unless you want to stay there."
"Got it," I affirmed. "Thanks." Enos turned around and started limping his way back towards Linden. It looked like the guy really needed a cane.
"And don't come back to my shop unless you want to buy something," he shouted before he was out of earshot.
I looked at the portal and then over to Aaron.
"Have you ever used these before?" I asked.
"No, actually. When the game was in development, I had access to the admin console. I could make myself appear wherever I wanted instantly."
"Well then, you're up first."
Aaron shrugged.
"Well, let's just hope it doesn't hurt."
He grinned and made a running jump straight into the center of the swirling blue energy. There was a zing sound when his body was fully consumed. "Why do I have the strange feeling I'm going to regret this?" I muttered to myself. I took two steps back, ran forward, and dove headfirst into the portal. Chapter 23, Day 6, Earth.
"Japan just went offline," the Secretary of Defense announced. Senator Gates smiled.
"Everything is going a lot smoother than expected."
The President licked his lips and sat the cup of coffee he was drinking down on the conference room table.
"That leaves Mexico and Canada, right, Bill?"
The stress of the last 2 days weighed fine lines under his eyes, and several strands of his gray hair were sticking up from their usual slicked-back position.
"That's correct, Mr. President, sir. They will be going offline by midnight tonight, as planned."
"Okay, good. Make sure that your team does another data scan to make sure there are no unauthorized signals being beamed to satellites that we don't know about. If this plan fails, there's no chance we'll get the cooperation of the world's nations again. We're making history here."
"Yes, sir," the secretary said before turning and exiting the conference room.
"And you're certain," the president stressed, lowering his eyes to Kendra, "that any VR units that are still out there won't be able to function once the CPU blockchain has been wiped out?"
Kendra nodded.
"Theoretically, they would power on, but won't be able to connect to anything, so a consciousness transfer wouldn't be possible."
The president turned to Senator Gates.
"Even if we don't connect, I want to make sure every piece of that damn hardware is confiscated, so there's no risk of it getting hacked and connected to another game somewhere down the line."
"That's all lined up, sir. There's no question in my mind that we can get them all."
The senator cleared his voice.
But, with all due respect, Mr. President, I'm not sure having Ms. Ramos here in our strategy room is in our best interest, considering she helped the lead programmer perform an illegal login into a Nexicon VR.
You read the suicide note, Kendra said.
That he's going inside so that he can show us something is a little vague. And the fact that you found the body and the note so soon after death is more than a little suspicious.
Hey, I...
Kendra started, but was quickly cut off.
Settle down, both of you. The president pointed towards Senator Gates. She's innocent until proven guilty, and she's our best point of contact at Nexicon now that both Dr. Winston and Aaron Sizemore are gone.
And the fact that you're allowing her technology in here.
Senator Gates, the president said sternly, this issue is no longer up for debate. The Secret Service has checked her computer, and it's clean. If, and that's a big if, there's something we can learn by connecting to Eden's Gate, we at least have to give it a chance. We've all lost people close to us in this incident.
So what if we get some chat messages? Senator Gates asked. Or if there's a video, how do we know it's not pre-recorded?
That's not all you'll get, Kendra explained. If Aaron is able to open the port from inside the game, we'll get a live audio-video stream and be able to communicate back and forth. We'll be able to see into the world so long as they keep the port open.
Senator Gates adjusted his position in his chair and smirked.
6 days and no communication, no screenshots, no video, no audio. Nothing to indicate that something is going on inside that death trap. I'm not holding my breath that we're going to suddenly be able to peek into Pandora's box less than a day before we're wiping it out.
That's enough, the president said. We'll have someone monitoring the feed until total blackout tomorrow. In the meantime, I need both of you to work together to make sure this all goes according to plan.
Kendra clenched her teeth as the president started rattling off more orders, hardly able to focus on the things he was saying. She looked down to the no signal that was splashed across her laptop screen.
Come on, Aaron, she thought. Don't let your death be for nothing.
Chapter 24, Month 1, Day 6, Year 1. I fell out of the other side of the teleporter, face first into a thick puddle of mud, and I immediately heard thunderous footsteps pounding the ground. The soft dirt around me was shaking.
Run! Aaron yelled.
I pulled my head up and wiped my face with the back of my hand just as I saw a giant, four-legged monster stomping its way towards me. One of its legs alone was 4 or 5 times the size of my body, and under its thick, hairless hide of skin, its muscles undulated. 4 massive horns jutted forward from its face, which complemented the horror of its endless rows of sword-sized teeth.
You have failed to inspect your target.
I stood, slipping on the nasty swampland, and dashed awkwardly towards Aaron. In every direction was mud and tall grass, but worst of all, in every direction I could see creatures looming. Flying insects, mutant snakes, floating humanoids, and atrocities that looked like a mix between dinosaurs, reptiles, and men.
What the fuck is this?
I yelled as Aaron sidestepped a group of creatures that looked like airborne frogs with butterfly wings.
Just run, he yelled back.
We just kept running, not seeing any safe place to escape to, when I saw a human-like hand reach up out of the mud and latch onto Aaron's ankle. Aaron tripped and fell face forward in the mud as the hand pulled on him hard, apparently trying to drag him into the ground somehow.
Oh, shit!
Aaron yelled as he clawed at the mud, trying to grasp onto anything for traction, but failing. I pulled out my blade as I caught up to him and slashed at the base of the arm sticking out of the mud. There was a loud squeal, and the arm let go, retracting back under the surface.
Get up, I yelled, and held out my hand to help Aaron stand. Watch your legs, he yelled as he managed to get back to his feet.
More hands started sprouting out of the ground all around us, trying to grab onto something above,
I swung my sword around wildly, trying to ward them off.
Over there, Aaron shouted, pointing to a dry-looking, unoccupied hill in the distance.
Go, I yelled, swiping my sword at another clawing hand. We ran, lifting our knees high to our chests to avoid getting stuck in the mud or grabbed by one of the sprouting arms. When we got near the base of the hill, it seemed like there were no other monsters close by that were in range of attack. But a pair of tall, upright creatures with long spears noticed us from a distance and started racing at us. They were both naked, and between their legs was nothing but smooth, scaly skin, just like the rest of their body. Their frame bore resemblances to humans, but their fishy faces had pulsating gills on each side, and a fin was sticking out the top of their head.
Name, Bloodthirsty Swamp Runner. Race, Humanoid. Level, 8. Health, 120. Mana, 0. Stamina, 120. Status, Aggressive.
As the Swamp Runners ran towards us, I placed my hand on Aaron's shoulder to stop him from moving. Stand your ground here. There's no other monsters attacking. I lifted my sword and held it with both hands.
Party up, Aaron said.
You have been invited to join Aaron's party. Do you accept, yes or no?
I willed myself into Aaron's party just as the first swamp runner closed in and darted the tip of its spear at my chest. I parried, slapping the spear out of the way with my sword, then swung upwards to slash the monster across its chest. The swamp runner screamed in pain, and I rolled forward towards its friend that was approaching behind him.
Keep the other one busy, I yelled to Aaron, referring to the monster I just injured.
The second swamp runner swung its spear at me, which I easily blocked with my sword, and I shot a fire blast at its face and watched as it dropped the spear and screamed in agony. Swamp runner equals swamp equals water. Clearly, beings that live near water would be weak against fire and vice versa. I drove my sword into the swamp runner's chest as it clawed at my flames, ending its life immediately. Then turned around and saw Aaron ducking and dodging the attacks of the other. It seemed like Aaron just couldn't get close enough with his dagger to land any strikes. I shot a fire blast at the other swamp runner, and it dropped its weapon and howled. Another swipe of my sword across its back, and it fell lifeless to the ground.
You have gained 400 XP.
I walked to the base of the hill and sat down to catch my breath. Aaron's chest heaved as he sauntered over to join me.
Grimora, huh? I asked.
Fuck this place, man. When I placed the portal here, I didn't expect I'd have to come at level 3. I figured I'd be level 10 at least.
You're level 3 already, huh?
Yeah, I gained a level back at the orc camp when I killed the shaman.
When you helped kill the shaman.
Yeah, whatever.
I looked out across the swamp and saw monsters everywhere. The hill that we were on was pretty much surrounded. But I also felt a thick heaviness in the air, and it was almost as if I could hear a low ringing sound.
Do you feel magic or something? I asked. I can't tell if I'm imagining things.
Yeah, I feel it. It's like a buzz.
Aaron stood up and climbed to the top of the hill.
Hell yeah, jackpot, he said when he reached its peak. Get over here.
I scaled my way up to Aaron and he pointed down to a giant runestone that was jutting out of the base of the mound.
We need that, he said.
Hovering near the runestone was a creature that looked much like the swamp runners, but instead of legs was a long tail curled to the back and large nipple-free breasts. It floated in the air as it moved, and tucked under one of its arms was a spellbook.
Name, Swamp Runner Sorceress. Race, Humanoid. Level, 8. Health, 80. Mana, 100. Stamina, 80. Status, Aggressive.
Far in the distance was a group of 4 other sorceresses, all huddled together.
Get down, I said, and lay in a prone position as I pulled my bow from my back.
Aaron followed suit.
I'm going to try to snipe her, but you should knock an arrow too, just in case I miss, or it's not enough to kill her.
Aaron nodded. And I readied my snipe shot while Aaron pulled back an arrow. My vision zoomed on the area right between the sorceress's large bloodshot eyes, and I waited as my body stilled. 1, 2...
Shit!
Aaron let go, and I watched as his arrow flew from his hands down towards the sorceress. I relaxed my arm and my heart pumped in anticipation of the unknown, but his arrow missed by a mile and made only the slightest sound when it landed in the mud. The sorceress turned towards the sound but seemed generally unalarmed.
"Sorry," Aaron whispered. "It slipped from my hands."
"Be careful," I said as I readied my snipe shot again. It probably wasn't the best situation for him to start training archery against level 8 monsters, but it was what it was. I let my snipe shot fly, and it soared through the air and landed silently between the swamp runner's eyes. The sorceress collapsed down into the mud.
"You have reached level 2 in snipe shot. You have gained 320 XP.
Aaron darted up and started for the runestone, but I called for him to stop. "Let's loot the other two we killed first." We returned to the two corpses, and other than a small purse and the weapons they were carrying, there wasn't much else to search, given that they were basically naked. I looted 15 gold from one and let Aaron have the spoils of the other. I inspected one of the spears and noticed there were no stat requirements.
"Warped spear, 6 to 14 attack damage. Durability, 6 of 10. Quality, poor. Rarity, common. Weight, 2.1 kilograms.
"You should equip this," I suggested. "That training dagger will be hard to use against anything with a reach." Aaron agreed and started pulling the spear's tiny holster off one of the monsters and tying it onto his armor.
"Not a big fan of pole arms, but I guess using them will be simple enough."
"Yeah, just take the pointy end and poke it into something, preferably up someone's ass." Aaron smiled.
"Oh, so you're not always Mr. Serious Pants."
I made a low chuckle. "Shouldn't you be more serious since, the fate of our lives supposedly rests on us getting into this dungeon?" Aaron slid the spear into the holster on his back.
"More than 5 million lives, actually."
He took a step forward and placed a hand on my shoulder.
"But not having a laugh isn't going to get us there any faster."
He smiled and started for the other side of the hill.
"Come on, let's bind up."
I followed Aaron to the runestone and touched the hard, gritty surface as I focused on making that location my starting point.
"You have bound to this location. Using a recall home spell or death will return you to this position."
"So, where's your dungeon?" I asked Aaron as he lifted his hand off the stone.
"There,"
he said, pointing to a humongous weeping willow far in the distance.
"I chose Grimora because that massive tree is visible from virtually anywhere you're standing in the zone."
There was a thick cloud of fog that hovered over the muddy ground, so it was difficult to make out everything that was in the path leading to the tree. But even with the smoke, I could tell that there would be quite a number of monsters we'd have to fight in order to get there. "So I guess we'll just slowly grind our way over there and retreat to the hill if we get in trouble," I said.
"We could try, but this area is mixed with all sorts of levels. I think it's better just to make a run for it."
"We don't have enough stamina to make it there in full sprint."
"Surely we can find a resting spot or two somewhere in between."
I shrugged.
"All right, your call."
I took a few steps forward towards the fallen sorceress and started examining the corpse. "Let me see what kind of loot this gal has first."
"You've received 25 gold pieces. You've received Emerald Ring. Durability, 90 out of 100. Quality, exceptional. Rarity, common. Weight, 0.1 kilogram. You've received Tattered Spellbook. Durability, 4 of 10. Quality, average. Rarity, rare. Weight, 0.3 kilogram.
I pocketed the gold and the emerald ring, but then I opened the spellbook. Most of the pages were covered with mud, ruined ink, or fell apart when I tried to open the page, but there were still two pages of the book that I could read. They looked similar to a scroll, but because I wasn't trained in the area of magic, I couldn't read anything other than the description.
"Water jet. Release a powerful spray of water onto a target. Requires 15 intelligence. Water magic level 2. Divine sight. Your eyes can see through the darkest of darks. Immunity to blinding spells and attacks. Requires 12 intelligence. Divine magic level 1.
I bagged the spellbook. That sorceress gave a lot of XP and had some decent loot on her. We should take the rest of them out before we move forward.
"I say we just run right past them. Forget the loot, dude."
"They're casters," I replied. "We'll take damage from them for sure, and we're not sure what they're capable of. It's safer to try to kill them. Besides, they seem weak to my fire damage.
Hmm, Aaron grunted. All right, but let's try to make it quick.
We positioned ourselves near the runestone and tried to strategize how to take them out. The basic plan we came up with was for me to fire a snipe shot at one and then follow up with a quick fire arrow on another. In the meantime, Aaron would try to land as many basic arrow shots as possible, and I'd switch to basic attacks after my first two moves. I couldn't afford to burn all my arrows up in flames. I readied my snipe shot and prayed that Aaron didn't let another arrow slip out of his hands as he knocked an arrow back. As my body stilled, I watched as the four floating sorceresses drifted around somewhat aimlessly. It was odd that they seemed perfectly fine without any sort of interaction with each other. But then again, they were fish people. I had never seen any fish that cared for deep intellectual discussion. My arrow soared through the air and pierced through one of the sorceress's skulls, and before the other sorceresses realized what was happening, I had already readied another arrow and let it fly towards a second, casting fire arrow on it after it left my hands. Aaron fired at the same time, and our arrows landed simultaneously, one sorceress being knocked back by my arrow and screaming as the flames scorched her skin, while the other howled when Aaron's arrow pierced her breast. The burning sorceress continued to swat at flames as I sent an arrow in her direction, while the other two sorceresses swam quickly in our direction. Another basic arrow from Aaron and me, and the second sorceress went down.
You have reached level 4 in archery.
As the sorceresses grew closer, I reached out my hand to cast a fire blast. But as the flames started pouring from my fingertips, one of the monsters made a high-pitched wail in our direction, and my magic was quenched. My head swam when I tried to cast Fire Blast, or even tried to remember how. It was as if I had a mental block of some sort, and the idea of magic just made me dizzy. That's when I noticed a small circle with three tiny dots under my stats bar. When I focused on the icon, I could see why I was suddenly dumbed down.
You have been silenced and cannot use magic or special abilities. Duration, 60 seconds.
Aaron let loose another arrow just as the other sorceress raised its scaly arm, and a transparent bubble of magic formed around the two sorceresses' bodies. The arrow hit the shield and bounced off, falling into the mud.
Oh, shit,
Aaron spat, trying to swap his bow for his spear.
Burn them!
They silenced my magic. We've got to get in close.
I pulled on the hilt of my sword, and before I could even make a step forward, one of the sorceresses swiped an arm across its chest, and a thick wave of muddy water shot up from the ground, smashing against Aaron and me, the pressure so intense that it knocked us to the ground. I coughed through muddy lips as the wave subsided and picked myself off the slippery ground. The wave had knocked 15% from my health, and 30% from Aaron, so I knew there wasn't time to think.
What the hell?
Aaron said as he stumbled to his feet, his thick orc furs matted in nasty mud.
Charge them, I yelled, and dashed through the mud as quickly as I could.
The third sorceress, the one that I had burned earlier, had finally recovered from my fire, and was closing in on its friends when it made the same motion to cast another wave spell.
Dodge to your right, I yelled, and made a quick roll to my left,
barely missing another wave of thick, powerful mud.
You have reached level 3 in dodge.
What?
Aaron yelled, right before he was slammed in the face and knocked down again. I leapt forward, and barely in the range of the first two sorceresses, I swung my sword in a wide motion and clipped both of them across the breast. They reared their heads back and screamed, then swiped at me with the sharp nails of their free hands. My armor plus Adili's barkskin buff seemed to protect me from most of their physical damage, each blow only knocking my health down about 3%, and when I swiped my sword back the other direction, I slashed their chests again, then dove the tip into one of their necks.
You have reached level 4 in swords. You have gained 1 point of strength.
The sorceress's eyes went blank and she fell to the ground, and just as I was about to turn to finish off the second one, I felt my body rising into the air. I was caught in a large, transparent bubble that the scorched sorceress we'd forgotten about seemed to have cast on me. I swung my sword at the bubble, but it just bounced back at the magical field, and I continued to rise and rise. Aaron dipped his spear into the side of the sorceress that I had cleaved and it reached back and swiped him. He pulled his pole back and slammed it in again, and then again, and finally the sorceress died. They were at a distinct disadvantage at close range, so long as none of their friends were in range to cast spells, spells like the one that I got caught in. When the sorceress holding me in the bubble saw Erin charging for her, she lowered her hand, and the bubble around me popped. I must have been at least 12 feet in the air at that point, and I screamed as I fell backwards and down to the ground below. A waterlogged tree branch was jutting out of the ground, and while most of my body slapped into soft mud, the back of my head clipped the wood, causing my eyes to erupt with stars upon impact. I squeezed my lids tight and blinked several times, attempting to clear my vision. I lay there stunned for several seconds. When I finally sat back up, my head was throbbing, and I saw that the fall had brought me down to 20% health. A few meters away, Erin was ducking and dodging the sorceress's quick scratch attacks, trying to find an opening for his spear. There was no barrier around the last fishwoman, and I noticed that my silence had finally worn off. I raised a palm and sent fire blast in her direction, knocking her back and burning her last bit of health up in flames.
Advancement. You have reached level 8 and gained 3 attribute points. To assign your attribute points, open your status page. You can increase any of your known skills by 1 level. Choose wisely, as your choices cannot be undone. You have gained 10 SP.
Aaron's shoulders slumped, and he took a few deep breaths before turning. His feet warily trudged through the mud, and when he was finally beside me, he sat his ass down in the soft soil. His health was at 30%. That was close, he huffed. Way too close, I agreed. And we're nowhere near that tree yet. I pulled up my stats so that I could assign my newly earned AP and LP. Given how low the monsters had managed to bring my health, now seemed like a good time as any to put an LP into first aid and an AP into vitality. What was most concerning about the fight was my fall. The hard impact left me stunned for several seconds, and if there had been another enemy around after that, I would have certainly died. So I put a point into willpower to help work towards curbing those kinds of incidents. I considered for a moment to throw an AP into charisma, like Erin suggested. I wasn't having too much difficulty fighting creatures of roughly my level, and it would be pretty cool to get back from a long mission in Grimora and have Adili, or any other babe for that matter, thirsty for some gunner attention. But then again, I wouldn't even exist in the world if the consequences of not reaching the dungeon were true. And I still needed to find Rachel. I placed another point in willpower. The panty-melting, irresistible Gunner Long would have to wait for another day.
Let's loot these bitches and keep moving, Erin said.
You need to get some of your health back first. I reached inside my bag, searching for one of the 2 food rations I was carrying. We still had a long way to go for me to blow my health potions, so the increased regen from food would have to do. There was a sudden, rapid patter of strong footsteps coming from behind us, and before I could even turn to see what was coming, large jaws with long, inward, curved black teeth clamped around Aaron's skull and pulled back with such speed and force that his head was ripped completely from his body. Blood spewed into the air from Aaron's severed neck, and the monster tilted its body back and chomped its teeth, letting the head slip down its throat. The dark green-skinned thing looked like a giant velociraptor, but had a longer body and a slender, fish-like tail with fins jutting from the tops of its length. Its long black talons looked like they could pierce steel. I gripped my sword and scrambled backwards on the mud, but the thing just turned to me and leapt. I didn't even have time to swing as its razor-sharp fangs sank deep into the bone of my face, and I screamed bloody murder right before it ripped my lower jaw right from my skull, stopping me from making any additional sounds. The pain was severe, even more than when I had been backstabbed in the woods. My health dropped to 0, and I watched for the last couple seconds of my life as the monster dropped my lower jaw on top of me and dipped its head down to rip a mouthful of flesh and entrails from my body.
You have died. All of your current level's progressions has been reset to 0%, and any unused attribute and level points have been lost. You will respawn at your last bound location in approximately 2 hours.
Take this time to reflect on your choices.
Chapter 25. Month 1. Day 6. Year 1. The dark